Hello and welcome to Resync, an Assassin's Creed podcast. I'm Landon. That's Lucas.
That's me.
Hi, Lucas.
Hi.
And we're back for another episode. It's sequence 8.
Yeah.
This is the first episode 8 of the series. You know, we only had 7 episodes last season for the first Assassin's Creed. We're in uncharted technically we've been in uncharted territory the whole time, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is more extra uncharted.
Yeah.
This is Uncharted 2. Conveniently, it came out the same year as Assassin's Creed 2.
Wow.
You know what also came out in 2009? Arkham Asylum. Which, funny enough, I actually saw IGN Beyond was playing through the Arkham Asylum for... They kind of have this like game club that they started. And so they'll be like playing through... just a game each month, and they picked Arkham Asylum, which I thought about doing because, you know, I love the Arkham games, but also I'm a full-grown adult with a lot of stuff to do, and so I don't really have the time to play through a whole game in a month. You know, like, to be fair, like, Arkham Asylum isn't that long, but still, it is a phenomenal game, and as you can tell. I like Batman, so, you know, Batman. Good stuff, but... Yeah, you know, they're not quite doing it like Resync does, you know what I'm saying? Like, IGN's cool and all, but it is what it is. And I'm trying to figure out what the hell I did with my notes. They're over there. So, Lucas, take it away while I grab the, or if you want to grab the note, I guess you're technically closer. All right, but yeah, sequence 8. We'll get into it right after we get to the trivia question for last week, which, what can I say? I stumped Malarkey. I'm pretty proud of it. I'm pretty proud of it. But last week's trivia question was, during the second optional conversation with Rebecca when you're outside of the Animus, what does Desmond refer to as being a cool new feature in the Animus? It's this kind of meta reference. And so basically what he says is like, they talk about, because he mentions that there are glitches in the Animus where he doesn't understand what's being said. Like, there's Italian, essentially. And she's like, yeah, you know, like, the processing does kind of lag behind a couple times and trying to work on it. And he goes, yeah, well, the subtitles are a nice addition. Which is really funny, considering the first game didn't have subtitles. Yeah. And so it's new for the second game. And so, like, I'm a huge subtitles guy. I'll always have them on because I like catching some of the background stuff and everything. And I just
can't hear, I feel like, sometimes. And it's just like, oh, I can read it.
Right. And especially with a lot of movies now, like, doing, like, dynamic surround sound and stuff when I don't have a surround system. Yeah, a lot of times it makes dialogue really quiet. So I'm just... I'm always a proprietor of subtitles all the time, because dynamic range is not something that I have a specialty in when it comes to audio. So, yeah, I very much appreciate subtitles, and so it is actually something that bugs me about the first game, is that it just straight up doesn't have any. And so they made this kind of meta call out for the second game, adding subtitles, which I'm very happy about, and it was really funny.
Apparently a lot of people had to be, because... Yeah. It must have been a big point for them to make a joke about it.
Yeah, so, but that was the trivia question for last week. Congrats to anybody who did get that right, but...
But it wasn't you, Malarkey.
Wasn't you, Bozo. So, take that. So, we'll get into this week's here in a little bit, but before we do a proper jump in, we did have one last piece, potentially, of Assassin's Creed Shadows news. Again, we are literally just, like, 2 weeks away, essentially, at this point.
Crazy.
For the game to drop, it's right around the corner, they're gearing up, and they did their final deep dive, which was all about the hideout. And, you know, sort of this place. This is something that more so got introduced in Valhalla in terms of, like, really getting into, like, base building and having something. You know, we've seen similar iterations in other games of having, like, an assassin's hideout. But it wasn't really, like, you know, extended like it was in Valhalla until then. And so now we're seeing it return, seeing some new additions, features, whatnot. And so they did a deep dive onto all the stuff that entails, which, I mean, I was talking about it with Lucas. It's a lot of, like, stuff we've seen in other yeah. games. I mean,
it's pretty standard.
Yeah, I don't think there's really too much to write home about here. Like, I don't think any of it's bad necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, I don't think any of it needs improving or anything like that. It's just customization stuff like this isn't something that I necessarily spend too much time in on my games. Like, I'm not that much. I've never been that big of an Animal Crossing guy or just anything with lots of huge customization like that, especially in games that aren't focused on it. You know, it's one thing yeah. when that's the primary basis of the game, because then you can really, like, dive deep into it. But like, something like this.
I remember the Hogwarts Legacy, like, it was kind of cool, but, like, I was kind of annoyed by it. Like, the stuff that it made me do with it, because, like, I don't really want to do this. I just want to, like, blast people with some spells and do missions.
So, yes, I agree. But one thing I actually did like about Hogwarts Legacy that I hope slash wish Shadows would do, I don't necessarily know if that's going to be the case, doesn't sound like it would be, is I really like how legacies evolved throughout the game, and like how you kept getting like new like expansions to the Room of Requirement and different,
like, yeah, that was kind of cool. I did like that.
So yeah, versus you just kind of getting like one plot and you're like, all right, you'll unlock some new stuff for it, but this is pretty much what you get.
Yeah, they make it sound like you get 1 acre.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, because they literally say you have slightly over 1 acre to customize how you want. And again, like, this type of style isn't new to video games or whatever, so it's not like, oh, Ubisoft, do better. But I do think I actually really liked the Hogwarts Legacy approach of it. Like, especially, I think that one gets a little bit of bonus credit just because of just how Hogwarts Legacy was in general. It's just a love letter to Harry Potter fans. So I think there's a little bias there because of just being able, like, having that nostalgia for the Room of Requirement and just Hogwarts stuff. You know, there's a little bit there, and I think, to be fair, Assassin's Creed Shadows can also have a lot of that because you've got a lot of nostalgia for the franchise in general, as well as just Japanese culture, and that being, like, the theme throughout this entire game is trying to show off, like, authentic Japanese history, culture, what have you, and so, you know, there are ways they can benefit off of this. And so obviously we're not going to know every little facet of what it is right now. There's stuff that I'm sure they're kind of keeping as a surprise, but there is a bunch of customization you can do with the hideout. There's lots, they went into different, you know, buildings that can be built and stuff like that, which again, fairly standard, just buildings that kind of work with the different systems in the game, like your stables that unlock the ability to use your scouts for smuggling stockpiles, or the forge, which is where you upgrade your weapons and armor. You know, different, you know, very standard RPG gamey, you know, like stuff, you know, things that kind of work with the systems in play here. And that can all be kind of built and customized to your, you know, your own fancy. So kind of do whatever you want there. And then they also have these like themed rooms as well that'll boost XP, certain stats, health recovery, things like that. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't think there's too much to write home about. One thing I did like, though, is that the Sumi painting activity that you can do in the world, where you will, like, come across different animals in Japan and you'll paint them, then they become accessible in your hideout, so you can place them in the hideout and they can just
kind of, as real animals, not as paintings.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if you can place paintings, though. I feel like you probably could.
I hope so.
Because, yeah, they also have, like, you know, different wall art and stuff like that to customize your buildings and whatnot. So I imagine you could probably do that as well. But, yeah, the animals can then be in your hideout. They just roam around. I believe in, like, a set area. I don't think you can just place them wherever, but
you can pet them.
Yeah, you can pet them, hang out with them, stuff like that. So that's cool. I'm hoping that there's, like, a pretty, like, wide variety of, like, cool animals in Japan. That'd be cool. Instead of just kind of, like, you know, the standard. And which I assume, since they built a whole mini game around it, I imagine there's probably going to be a pretty wide variety. But yeah. And then, you know, one of the things they talked about in a lot of the lead up was about these people that you recruit to your hideout that are helping you out. And they go a little bit more into just kind of evolving and unique dialogue between people in the hideout and stuff like that. Again, a lot of buzzwords that we've been seeing over the last generation of these. Like, I personally, I think it's coming from like Red Dead Redemption 2. a lot of, like, because people are really into, like, organic events now and things happening. And so I think there's a lot more focus on the development side about making these sort of organic experiences within the game.
It's got to feel alive.
Yeah. So, you know, they talked a little bit about that. But, yeah, this is kind of like they said that this was the end of their deep dives through all the different features of Shadows. So we're almost there. It's exciting. Fun times. Yeah, so cool stuff. We're almost there.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. People do have review copies. They've been posting over the last couple of days of, you know, all that. So that is out in the wild. And
you don't.
And neither do you.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I don't care.
Well, I do. But they did reveal that reviews will officially drop on the 18th at noon. So slightly, but like it's about 36 hours before the game drops. Which, like, I'll take as an okay sign, you know? Like, I think any game that either doesn't have any time before as the embargo, or it's just, like, the day of or the day before, like, is always a bad sign. I can't remember a time where a game had an embargo like that and it was reviewed well. It's usually a bad omen. So, like, you know, I will say, like, this seems pretty in line for most games. It's, like, a couple days before release or a few days. So I don't think there's anything to really worry about with that embargo. You know, there are definitely some that will do, like, a week before the game comes out. But I think those are ones that, like, pretty safe ones. Like, I feel like the GTA 6 embargo will probably be well before the game comes out because they won't care. But, you know, that's good news, I guess. And so we're almost there. Get excited. And with that, let's get into Sequence 8. How are you feeling now, now that we've made some progress in the back half of the game?
Well, the sequence was like, it was a tad goofy, but I was fine with it.
That makes sense. I can agree with that. Still introducing new mechanics. We got to fly Leonardo's flying machine.
Yeah, that was fun.
So, you know,
even to, like, crash that thing so many motherfucking times.
I crashed it twice. There's I crashed it once during the test flight because it well
you have to crash it in the
test flight. Yeah, I get that, but that might have been forced. I don't know, because all of a sudden it wasn't controlling like it was supposed to, and just went down.
Kind of go down,
right?
Yeah.
Okay,
I wasn't. I also crashed, and it was like, you almost flew. And like, I didn't fly far enough,
right? So, but whether you want to count that or not, I was still kind of getting the hang of it, and then I did crash once during the actual flight.
My problem was with that is, like, I just know where to go. I thought I was, like, I kept going right instead of left when I, like, initially went, and apparently if you go right, it just dead ends. And I'm just like, well, now I can't go anywhere, and I just crash because I get, like, lost, and I can't, like, turn. Just
follow the fires. They're on the minimap.
Yeah, but then there's, like, no more fires at a certain point. And not close to the building.
Well, you gotta follow the path because there are a couple diverging paths. Like, yeah, there's a lot more fire because it's been forever since I played. I assumed, like, you cleared out the four places that there would just be four fires, but no, there's actually dozen fires. There's like at least
two dozen fires.
Yeah. So, and they kind of span off. So, like, yeah, I just kind of followed the natural progression of the fires.
Well, see, I followed the progression of the fires right, but if you followed them left, that was the way to go.
Well, were there also guards? Because you can use guards for a boost as well. That was kind of my bailout. Like, if it was ever to the point where I'm like, I'm not close to a fire. If you lock onto a guard and do that kick, it'll propel you up into the air.
I didn't catch on to that.
Yeah. So, that's a little cheat way of kind of maximizing your stuff. Because, yeah, there were a couple times in my flight where I was getting pretty close to crashing out, and so I would just frantically look for the nearest, like, line of archers and lock onto one, because when you kick them, it'll, like, push you back up into the air, like, a pretty significant amount. Honestly, like, they could have dialed that down a little bit, because it 100%, like, I feel like you probably wouldn't even need the fires if you were to just, like, go from archer to archer, but then I feel like you'd probably die getting that close to the archers over and over again. You'd probably take a few hits here and there, so your health probably wouldn't make it. But, it was pretty funny.
I wonder what the last Assassin's Creed game to, like, kind of do weird shit like that. Because, like, they've had, like, the cart they had to control.
Right.
And then now they've had, like, the Leonardo flying machine. And, like, do any games do that anymore?
To be honest?
Like, Assassin's Creed games, like, do they, like, have fun with that?
Well, it's hard to say because a lot of, at least in my experience, because, like I said, I've played pretty much every mainline Assassin's Creed game with a couple exceptions, but I haven't beaten an Assassin's Creed since Black Flag. So I think a lot of those types of mechanics are usually saved because, like, the first act is, you know, yeah, you're introducing the core mechanics and the core gameplay. You're not really doing wacky stuff like that just yet. And so, to be honest, I don't really know. But, I mean, I would think at least through Syndicate there would be stuff. I know, like, I know there's a bar fight in Unity. And so, like, it's the...
Because I played a lot of Odyssey, like, 30 hours of it or something. Because I did a lot of side shit, honestly. I didn't play, like, right through the story.
But, right.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, yeah, it's fair.
I never saw stuff like that, like wacky stuff. And
well, I mean, on one hand, you could say they relegated them to side missions when it came to the RPGs. But then also, like, I don't know, like, I feel like it's, yeah, like side missions, side quests, like different things like that is more so where you would see stuff similar to that. But I will say it's harder to kind of find the sort of cinematic quality, I guess.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's... I feel like a big staple of the 360 generation is cinematic. Like what we talked about in past episodes about, like, Gears of War, Uncharted. You know, a lot of them will boast these cinematic experiences where, honestly, it's not like there's, like, super intensive gameplay. It is more of, like, fast-paced, like, action, like, more so, like, reacting, things like that. Shocked we haven't seen any cutscenes yet, because those are, you know, this is the generation where they're all the rage. Yeah. And so, you know, which I think there are cutscenes in Assassin's Creed. Or not cutscenes, quick time events. I don't think they use them super... super often, but I feel like...
Well, like, the quick time events that I've seen in this game are, like... hugging people.
Well, yeah, right, like different like cutscene things like that. But I do feel like they add some more later on, if I remember correctly. Like I said, it's been forever, but you know, I feel like a lot of Assassin's Creed 2's kind of weird like gameplay gimmick stuff has to do with that sort of cinematic focus that the industry was heading towards with the 360, because I mean, this generation was the first generation where we really approached like photorealistic graphics, you know, like the PS2 and the Xbox were pretty close, but it was more like cartoonish like things. You know, you see like Final Fantasy X, you know, like obviously you have like smoothed over like character models and stuff like that, but they're more like animated characters versus photorealistic. There's a lot more stylistic stuff. Like we've got Wind Waker, you know, being like the cel shaded, like that's the kind of art styles you see in the previous generation, whereas now we're getting to more like movie like experiences. And so I think these types of gameplay mechanics kind of stem from that, about wanting to go more cinematic versus...
That makes sense. People are just like enjoying the cinematic feel.
The ambiance of it all, if you will. But yeah, I mean, still great. Still, you know, fantastic time. But going to the start of the sequence, you know, it's 1485 in Venice, which the... this kind of takes place over, like, over about, like, a year. I think the next sequence goes to 86. And so the timeline of this is a little ambiguous. I think it's fairly soon after, because the whole thing is like Ezio goes to this meeting that Carlo's attending where he's questioned by a Templar about Emilio's whereabouts. But they're basically just like, he'll probably show up with the others, and they start. So Ezio tails them, and basically they're plotting to take over Venice and assassinate the Doge, you know.
The Doge.
Yeah, which, how apt.
Yeah, that sounds something maybe we should think, you know.
But, you know, they're plotting to poison the Doge and seize control of the city. And pretty, like, they're talking a lot about Ezio, and that, you know, there's an assassin who has completely just wiped out the Pazzis and is now operating in Venice, because when they meet up with the others, they're like, nah, Emilio's dead, like, yeah, the assassin got to him.
Like, how do you not know, I don't know how that man did not know Ezio was there yet still. Like, I was laughing at the other guy for not knowing, I mean, already we killed that guy, and how did he not know? That guy's dead.
Literally. But, you know, so they're all, like, freaking out, being like, oh, shit, like, this is going down. And, you know, the big boy himself, Rodrigo Borgia, or whatever the fuck his name is, he's over there, and he's like, yeah, I'm handling this personally, because y'all keep screwing the fuck up.
Yeah, it's like this one dude is just putting the shit in all of our plans.
Yep. So, you know, he goes over the plane with them, starts doing stuff. They're all kind of on edge, looking around for Ezio, not realizing he is actually there, but he's kind of assuming he is.
Yeah.
And so they're getting a little cagey about it. But basically, they're like, you know, we need to accelerate our plans because, you know, we might all be dead if we don't. So let's get on with it. And so Ezio kind of feels a little bit of guilt because it is kind of on him, which... I don't know, like, I mean, he's literally, like, I feel like a lot of this game has been being, like, reactive. Because, yes, it is, like, a quest for vengeance. He wants to avenge his family and whatnot. But he is also kind of, like, interrupting these events that would cause massive, you know, chaos and, you know, big wins for the Templars. Like, they tried to overthrow the Medicis, which he stopped, which, obviously, his motives were... not quite necessarily to save the Medicis. It's more so about, like, the vengeance with his father. But he is aligned with those beliefs as well. So, like, as much as he's like, oh, no, what have I done? Mm-hmm. Like, if he hadn't done anything, I feel like it would have been a lot worse.
What do you think stops him from just, like, murking him right there and then? Because there's, like, not that many guards. And there's definitely times in that, like, sequence where I could have gone down there and just been like, stab, 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 stab. And it would have been fine.
Well, I mean, they do mention this bodyguard who's with them. And they talk about how he's, like, super skilled and stuff like that. And, I mean, the whole thing about, like, an assassin, like, one of the core tenets is, like, talks about, you know, not going in unprepared and, like, not trying to compromise the Brotherhood. And so, like, I feel like rushing in and just being like, eh, screw you guys, like... risks the possibility of him getting captured and...
Well, I feel like she should plan to kill him. Like, he knew they were all meeting up.
Right?
You're going to the meeting. He should have just been like, maybe I should just kill these guys right here.
What if that bodyguard was, like, super strong and could, like, get rid of Ezio?
Well, then that sucks, but...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, he didn't know anything about the majority of them, and he still doesn't know too much about Rodrigo. Like, you know, like, there's a lot of unknowns. And so, like, could he have done it? Maybe. Maybe even probably. But are you willing to run the risk of that? When he's really the only active assassin in, like, all of Italy. Because, like, you know, you've got Mario and, like, the mercenaries and stuff like that. But really, you know, like, Ezio doesn't really have a brotherhood to count on.
Yeah.
So it is just kind of him. So there's a lot of unknowns to deal with in that. But, I mean, it is fair. Like... like I said, I don't think, especially with how, like, brutally badass we're really becoming in the game, yeah. I think it probably could have been doable, you know, just a little too much plot armor for those guys at the moment, you know, wouldn't be as fun of a game if you did that, but, yeah, so they're, you know, they're essentially plotting, and so Ezio goes and runs back to the... to Emilio's palazzo where Antonio and Rosa are and explains, you know, everything about them and being like, hey, you know, they're trying to do something tonight. And so... Yep. And so they've got to scout out the Palazzo Ducale, which just so happens to be where the... where an assassin's tomb is.
Yeah, which I did before that mission and was like, really, I was like, man, I already took this path.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I had also done that before that mission, but I kind of just forgot that you also did the tomb. But it feels like a good time to talk about that narratively. And so there is an assassin's tomb. So if you haven't done it yet, you might want to skip ahead a little bit. But we can talk about San Marco's Secrets.
Yeah.
So how'd you feel about this tomb?
Honestly, this one kind of annoyed me a little bit. I did like how it was different than the rest of the tombs. Like, it was kind of like, hey, solve a puzzle. Mm-hmm. So just like parkour. I mean, it still was a parkour puzzle, but like, it was like solve a puzzle.
Right.
I will say this is the most annoyed I've been with the climbing, though, was in that fucking place. I don't know why I couldn't get my angles right or some bullshit, but I kept jumping off of every, like, just right. one, and I kept failing.
Was it the one with the circle things, and then you had to do a back jump onto the thing?
Yeah.
And it didn't want to do it. It didn't want to do it on the water, on the wall.
Yeah.
It took me like 4 tries.
Bro, I was getting mad.
No, 100%. They screwed up the coding on that part because, it was doing the same thing. And I'm like, how could I possibly be fucking this up? There's only one possible way to do this. Like, what's going on? It took me forever. And it was making me very mad. I completely understand. And there was another one too where I was going up the stained glass window, and I guess I back jumped too early, and he just completely missed the lever.
Did he die?
I lost like half my health because I've got like 15 health squares. Okay. So yeah, I really can't die. Like, unless it's pretty significant, I have to do a pretty significant fall to die. But yeah, he just completely missed the lever and crashed on the floor, and I was like, all right, cool. But I do like I think the level design in this game is just so good in terms of these little parkour sections. And yeah, but it does. I think a lot of the advanced parkour challenges, I guess you would call them, that like these tombs represent really do point out the flaws of the physics engine more than I think they really realize, which again, it's a 15-year-old game. This was pretty cutting edge at the time, you know, like I can't be too mad. Yeah, I have a fair bit of grace for it because, you know, it's still miles ahead of a lot of other physics in 2009, but it is frustrating like when you're trying to pull off these like complex parkour mechanics and it's just not wanting to cooperate with you because
jumping, not catching a ledge because you jumped like this way instead of straight, and it's just like, come on, man.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where I feel like they just needed better, because there is some like assistive AI, I guess you would call it, when it comes to like, you know, like it does try to guess what you're trying to do in terms of like, especially if you're like exit jumping and stuff like that.
Just a bit more directional, like based on where your analog stick is pointed.
Right.
I feel like that's the way to do it.
Right. Because sometimes it's
it latches onto a weird thing.
Yeah, sometimes it will. It'll latch onto a weird thing, or it's not realizing what you're trying to do, and like that guesswork it's trying to do just isn't really right. So it's like, it's a little all over the place, but you know,
still fun though.
Still fun, and yeah, it was a unique departure because you know all the tombs so far have usually been like progressing through different areas, whereas this one's
maybe. But
yeah, this one's just like, hey,
press a button,
figure out all this stuff. Yep.
The Assassin's Creed logo.
Yeah. So, we've got 5 out of 6 seals.
5 out of 6, baby.
Only one left.
You can get that cool Altair armor.
Yeah, and then make everything else obsolete. But fun times. But also in this area is, you know, again, where the Doge is at. And so you scout out the palazzo with Antonio, and you know, you're trying to figure out all this stuff. You find this scaffolding to climb up to finally get on the roof.
Also, but I would point out, Antonio sucks at climbing.
Yeah.
He can't even do the leap of faith. I know he's not an assassin.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking like, the same thing. I was like, I did the leap of faith, and I got out real quick, because I'm like, oh, Antonio's going to follow.
I got a warning. I got a warning. I was like, you're too far away from your guy when I jumped off of there. I was like, well, why didn't he jump?
Come on,
he's like, he saw me go. He's safe.
Yeah. Just see him climb down.
Yeah, like, he just climbed down, like, come out real fast. I'm like, you bitch.
But, you know, fair enough. But we can't all be assassins. You know, can't all be like me. It is what it is. Can't be Ezio at the Torre da Firenze.
No.
But even going up all the scaffolding, still there's a big old fence in the way from the, like, actual proper palazzo. So it's pretty much impenetrable. And Antonio makes a comment of, like, you know, no man can do it. You'd have to fly. And Ezio does a whole, like, cartoonish, like, I have an idea.
He's like, fly, you say.
And that's when, you know, waddles over to Leonardo's. He's like, oh, Leo.
Remember that thing you had?
Mm-hmm. Like, does it work? And Leonardo immediately starts freaking out, and he's just like, no, it's a prototype, it's never been tested, it's really dangerous.
Yeah, he's like, well, how do you test it? He's like, I'm not testing. He's like, you can jump off something really, like, a high-ass building. He's like, oh, I do it all the time.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, that's just a regular Tuesday. So let's do it. And so, yeah, you test out this prototype, which, again, we've talked about a little bit earlier on, but you do this little test flight. Doesn't work, mostly because there's no way to stay into the air. It's essentially just a glider.
So you kind of just start falling, and eventually you crash.
Yeah. And so, Leonardo gets really upset. And Ezio calls it a piece of shit. And Leonardo's like, I don't know how to keep it up.
He's like, no, I suck.
Yeah. And, Antonio comes into them just kind of being upset. And Leonardo throws some plans into the fire. And that's when he realizes, oh, the paper rises. He's like, oh, heat rises. Oh, so
we'll have a bunch of fires all over the city.
Yep. And so the plot begins as Ezio starts taking out some guards across the city, which then frees up the thieves of the rebellion to then make some fires to then have all this heat rising so that when the glider catches the, essential heat from the fire, it'll then raise it back up. And so then you're able to fly on over to the palazzo to infiltrate.
Yeah, you're basically Batman.
Basically become Batman. But that does lead me to this week's trivia question, because there is a semi-missable achievement that can be obtained this sequence. It's the only real, missable achievement in the game. Everything else is just obtained, you can do whenever, or it's, story-based achievements. And so, but there is one where you can only get it this sequence and in sequence 12, because it revolves around the glider. And so there's only a couple spots. Otherwise, you just have to completely replay the game up to this point. The trivia question is, what is that achievement called? And I'll even give you the thing of, it does have to do with the fact of you have to take out a guard with the glider, which Leonardo even, spelled, or is it Leonardo or Antonio that talks about, you could just kick them down. I think it's Leonardo. Yeah, because he's like, you still have your legs.
Yeah, he's like, you might not have your arms because you want to use a sword.
Right?
He's like, I want to slice people from this thing.
Right? He's like, well, you kind of need your arms for, flying, but you do have your legs. And it is really fun to take out those guards. Because, you just come in and just, quah, sweep kick them, and then boost yourself back up into the air. But there's an achievement for getting that. But what's it called? So, name that achievement for this week's trivia question. I, of course, got the achievement, as I'm going for 100%, which I'm 22% of the way through the achievements for the entire Ezio collection. So I feel like I'm pretty far along in the achievements for this game. Now, that being said, I do have a couple achievements from Assassin's Creed Brotherhood in there, because I played a little bit of that a year or two ago. It's not technically accurate to just two, but I feel like there's three games, so I'm assuming 33% is 100, so I'm not too far off from that. But because I only have a couple achievements from Brotherhood, I'm pretty sure, so it shouldn't be too much of that percentage. But put to cool, and so. Yeah, you pilot the, Leonardo's flying machine to the palazzo to get inside and assassinate Carlo. However, you're too late to save the Doge.
Doge dies.
Yep. You get there right as his cup is poisoned.
He's like, don't drink that, as he's zipping it. And then he's like, eventually is like, he's already dead, bro. He drank, a whole cup.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, well, I tried.
When
you said that.
Because bro just pretty much immediately starts coughing up blood.
He just dies. He's just like, I tried.
Yeah. And so, you at least kill Carlo. You get that, but it is too late to save the Doge. And it's kind of weird because, after you have that little, scene with Carlo of just being how you can't stop this, blah, blah, blah. And then they cut back to the Doge continuing to die. You killed me.
And it kind of made me feel like he was it made it look like that Ezio killed him, when he came out of there. So I feel like you were gonna get blamed for that.
Oh, for sure. And I do think that's what they were going for, was because Carlo runs out and is an assassin has killed the Doge and is pinning it on you. And so with the Doge coming out and not specifying Carlo, which I think is what he was trying to do, but he just couldn't get out the right words. I'm assuming the reason for including that was to put more suspicion on Ezio, which I'm curious, because again, it's been a while since I played, so I don't remember the actual gameplay mechanics, but I'm curious if that's going to affect our notoriety going into the next sequence, because now we've killed a government member in Venice, apparently. And so,
which make good points.
Technically, we did anyway, because Carlo is a member of the Council of Ten, so he's basically like, you know, one of the like government directors. So like, we're technically guilty regardless. But you know, yeah, it's not looking great. This is the first time we've kind of failed, really, because like I said, we got our assassination target, and so Ezio's like true goal was accomplished, but in terms of the overall, like, you know, goal of like trying to keep the peace with Venice and restore, you know, like keep the Templars out, we did fail, which I think more goes towards Ezio's original point of feeling guilty. Because again, I think up to this point, him causing the Templars to accelerate their efforts shouldn't be like a bad thing. It's just a natural reaction to him saving people.
Yeah, and it makes him sloppier.
Yeah.
So like, I feel like Ezio can almost capitalize on it, because he's like catching him off guard. He's like getting them at their like best.
Mm-hmm.
If they start slacking, like, he's gonna clean up.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, they're acting a little too quick for him this time, because he failed. You know, he won, but at what cost? And so it'll be interesting to kind of
cost of the Doge.
Yeah. And so, you know, they appoint, and like, I'm assuming they'll appoint one of their Templars as the new Doge, and we'll have to see how that fallout goes. But, you know, Templars might have control of the city now because of this, even though he got his target. So we'll have to see, which then maybe he will have to kill the Doge. So, like, for realsies this time. So, interesting ramifications to come for that. But, yeah, that's pretty much it. It's not a super long sequence this time.
Nope.
You know, there's not a whole lot to go over.
Pretty short.
But, yeah, very interesting nonetheless. So we'll see. But yeah, do you have anything else you'd like to add about the sequence where we're at so far? Are you feeling nostalgic?
Always. But I don't remember it being such a multifaceted game. Is that a good thing?
Okay, yeah. You want to explain?
Yeah. Like, I don't remember having a lot of, like, of the like driving around a carriage or flying around in like the flying machine. Like, I don't remember that stuff at all.
Right.
For some reason, like, I don't remember that flying machine at all. I've beaten this game a couple times, so it's like, what?
Yeah, I do think I remembered a lot of these other stuff, but I thought they were like in the later Ezio games, because I definitely thought a lot of 2 was just like, oh, they cleaned up the gameplay, and, you know, it's just like Ezio's writing is really good. And that was like what I thought was a lot of the reasons why I loved, you know, the second game, was just because, you know, they improved on a lot of aspects on 1, and they have just like a much more cohesive story, and, you know, like, they added some side missions and stuff like that. But there is a lot more. There's a lot of stuff that, again, I thought was relegated more to like Brotherhood and Revelations on like adding on to it, because
yeah,
a lot of this stuff I feel like they really didn't need to have in here, and it still could have been like an 8 or 9 out of 10.
It was a way bigger upgrade from 1 than I remember it being.
Right? Yeah. It is a lot of it. And it honestly, like, kind of has me a little, well, it does and doesn't have me worried about how I'm going to feel about, like, Brotherhood and Revelations, because, you know, like, I still think, like, I went back and forth for a while on whether 2 or Brotherhood was my favorite, because I think Brotherhood is just also a fantastic game.
Hook Blade, like, maybe.
Yeah. So, well, that's Revelations.
God damn, I do that every time.
But, you know, with Brotherhood kind of continuing that story, and don't get me wrong, there's a lot of different new elements in Brotherhood, just with the amount that got added here, I'm like, man, like, 2 really is the best one. Like, it's just because of, like, the leaps and bounds they made over the first. And especially compared to where it's at, you know, it being in 2009, going, you know, going up against juggernauts like Uncharted 2 and Arkham Asylum and all these other fantastic games around that time. Borderlands, I think, was also in 2009.
Damn.
It could have been 2008. It was something around there.
That was a good year.
But, yeah, I mean, just crazy stuff. The whole generation, really, there's a ton of juggernauts. And so, yeah, standing out against them is definitely a fantastic feat. And, you know, Ubisoft really, they really popped their pussies on this one. And I'm hoping they do the same here with Shadows in a couple weeks. We shall see. But, yeah, it's, like I said, a bit of a shorter episode this week, but we'll get out of here. We shall see you guys next week. Remember to answer this trivia question down in the comments or over on our Patreon, depending on where you're listening / watching. Be sure to check out the Bonus Plus episodes if you haven't already. If you're not subscribed to the Apprentice tier, go ahead and do so if you've got the spare change. You can get some extra content from us and get the episodes a day early. All that fun jazz. Again, we're real close to Shadows. We'll see you guys next week for Sequence 9.
Yeah.
Gonna get into double digits here soon.
Holy shit.
But we're making our way through, and we're becoming a pretty strong assassin all the same.
Stabby stab.
Stabby stab. But remember, folks, nothing is true.
Everything is permitted.
See you next time.
Yeah.